CCFM 107.5.
It's such an honour and a privilege to have these gentlemen in studio this morning. Super, super excited to have Dr. Richard Howe back in the studio.
Hello, hello. Thank you for letting me back in.
It's such a pleasure. And Professor Doug Guyvett, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly.
That's right, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, just in terms of your field of speciality, Doug, philosophy is one of them, and the whole, and you're going to have to help me epistemology? What exactly is epistemology?
Ah, well, epistemology is a branch of philosophy concerned with the nature of knowledge, what it is, whether we can have knowledge, how so, if we can, and whether our beliefs are ever justified.
Oh, I love that. So now we've got a whole bunch of young people in the car. They're about to climb out of the car to go to school. And in terms of learning and gaining knowledge and that kind of stuff, let's give them something just short and sweet that'll maybe help them, because gaining knowledge and being able to be self-aware of, you know, who you are and those kind of things is part of life, right?
Well, sure it is. And every day and all through the day, we are making assumptions about the world and then navigating the world on the basis of those assumptions. And to live responsibly in the world, we really need to live on the basis of the knowledge that we can acquire.
Sure. So acquiring knowledge is a God-given thing, or is it just something we were lucky to get?
Well, our capacities to acquire knowledge are from God. We're created in the image of God, and we're rational beings because He created us that way. And so, yes, we have the capacities that we do for knowing because of God's intention and God's design.
So when it comes to young people, and I mean, I don't know if you were like me, but there were certain subjects at school that I just did not like. History was one of them. But now the irony is, as a 40-something-year-old, I actually really enjoy history and learning about various aspects and things that have happened in the past. But in terms of learning and actually saying, God, you've given me this brain, you've given me this ability to learn, you've given me this body, What is a healthy approach to school and learning and growing and developing?
Well, I think in the current context, it's more difficult than it used to be, because it's not clear that when you go to university and you walk into your classes that the teachers are intent on teaching you the truth. It's not that they wish to deceive. It's that they're not always convinced that there is such a thing as truth and that knowledge is possible. And so that makes the task of the student that much more difficult.
Yesterday we had the privilege of having Kristen Davis and Simon Brace in studio chatting around worldview. And worldview is a very, very important discussion, Dr. Richard Howe, in terms of having an understanding, firstly, of what shapes your worldview, and then what worldview do you have? Because, again, if we live our lives with our rose-colored glasses on, so to speak, with a worldview that is askew, then we can actually have some real challenges in terms of accepting who God really is, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in very often in my experience, what we would label as a worldview can affect people in a way that they're not aware of. So unless and until they're confronted by someone who challenges some of their basic assumptions, they may not even know that they have those assumptions. So one of the things I think is important for the Christian, especially, to help people understand is that we're not ultimately enslaved by some worldview that we can't see beyond, that it is possible at some point for us to see reality as it is. I love the glasses metaphor, but I think sometimes it can be misleading, where we inadvertently imply that somehow what we are Christians are advocating is just, oh, here's a Christian way of looking at the world. We go, well, I understand what that means, but really, as Christians, we're saying this is the way the world really is. It's not just a way of looking at it, but this is actually the truth, as Dr. Guyvett has already alluded to, the concept of truth.
That is powerful. I remember learning in school about that one scientist who made glasses that literally flipped his world upside down visually. And he wore the glasses whenever he was awakened, and obviously it must have been really difficult. But eventually his brain corrected so that when he had the glasses on, the world was the right way up. And so that brings a whole bunch of other questions to mind, like, how does your brain know what's the right way up? But obviously God created us that way, so that we know what's up and what's down. And yet we're on this globe, so it's this ball, and here in the south, we're, according to the Northern Hemisphere people who control the maps and things like that, we're at the bottom of the world, you know, so we're hanging upside down, so to speak. So do you guys feel a bit, heady or
Blood's
word?
Rushing to my
head. Blood
right
rushing
now.
To your head, you know. But again, you know, the size of who God is and how he created everything, and you look at the billions and billions of stars out there, and he put it all into place. I mean, it's got to blow your mind, right?
Yeah, well, in Genesis, where it speaks of creation, and it elaborates on all the wonderful things that God created, as an offhand statement, the author just says, oh, and he made the stars also.
Yeah. It's like, what? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are definitely going to continue this conversation. We're going to headlines with Nicola, but such an honor to have Dr. Richard Howe and Professor Doug Guyvett in studio. And I really hope that you're going to engage with this conversation. It's going to be a lot of fun this morning.
Yo, yo, check it out. If breakfast is the most important meal of your day, rockin', ladies and gentlemen, then you need to have yours in the company of friends.
It's always on.
CCFM.
It's the time to 18 minutes to 8 o'clock. It's such an honor and a privilege to have two apologists in studio this morning, Dr. Richard Howe and Professor Doug Guyvett. And we have got so many possible topics to speak about and so many things. And so in a big way, it would be helpful, granted we have limited time, but if you've got a question that you'd like to ask these incredible gents, then you're welcome to send it through on WhatsApp to the number 061-798-1075. And remember, you can listen to CCFM anywhere in the world, just like Dr. Richard Howe's wife is.
Well, as a matter of fact, hello to my wife, Rebecca, who's listening over the internet in the United States in Atlanta, Georgia. So, hello, sweetheart. I'll see you in a few days.
Oh, awesome. And it's already Monday night there. Well, it's only Monday night
there.
We're
6 hours ahead.
Okay.
So whatever 6 hours backwards from now.
Wow, so it's about 1 o'clock, quarter to 2 in the morning.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's love and devotion.
Well, I mean, and you're not surprised.
No, yeah, true. Yeah. So, Doug, let's just get into this discussion. And, Megan, maybe you should ask the question.
Okay. So, Dr. Douglas and Dr. Richard, they're real, I guess, veterans in the whole philosophical space and understanding of things. And I was just kind of thinking, you know, it's how easy it is to live from the memes that people post on Facebook. And how, you know, those things that people put in their statuses and they're like, life is a journey. You know, take two steps forward and
slide one back.
You know, like these like random philosophical, you know, kind of things that become sort of mantras that we live by.
Yeah. Or fortune cookie little sayings.
Yeah, you know those kind of things.
Like, what?
So like, how do we know between, you know, Christian wisdom and Christian truth and differentiate, you know, between just worldly, you know, kind of just philosophy. How do we kind of, you know, really not have the line blurred?
Yeah, I think one of the things to bear in mind is just maybe sort of an optimistic tone that, at least in principle, as Doug has already said, God has given us certain faculties by virtue of being created in his image. And so it is, at least in principle, for us to use our powers of reason to arrive at truth. But because of the fall, that gets perverted, and so we probably end up using our reason to distract from the truth more than anything else. And so I like to help my students try to understand exactly what it is that I think philosophy can do in service to the Christian faith, and try to cut through the cacophony that they run into, because, as I said, that it's used a lot of times to be antithetical. You know, if you were a physicist and you walked into your physics department as a professor and made some comment about, you know, I don't really think we can know what's true about the physical world, you'd probably be fired.
True story.
But if you were a philosopher and walked into most philosophy departments and thought you could know the truth, you would probably be fired in some sort of ironic way. That is to say, there's this sort of latent skepticism that permeates a lot of Anglo-American philosophy. So I think the Christian faith, there's not only what we can learn from what God has revealed through his creation, but we can also learn what God has revealed through his prophets and apostles. And those set boundaries to what I think our reason can and ought to be doing as we analyze God's world.
Sure. So, Doug, how do we do this, though, as parents wanting to pass on our faith and our belief system onto our children? And obviously the Bible is quite clear. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. But that training up a child, you know, those are a few words for doing a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and without guarantees. Because our children have free will, we simply do the best we can to provide them with opportunities for spiritual and intellectual development so that they're prepared to be adults in the world that we live in today. When my second daughter, who's now in her late 20s, was 7 years old, she came to me and she said, "Dad, I'd like to go for a walk with you." And this sounded very serious. So I said, "Well, sure, let's do that." We walked around the block. She said, "Can we just sit here on this wall? And I have some questions for you." And I said, "Sure." So we sat down and she said, "Dad, I want you to know, don't take this personally. I do believe that God exists. I believe in Jesus and the Bible, but I'm not sure if I should." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Because I'm just a little person."
Wow.
And she said, "I just don't know as much as you do. And I believe this because that's what you've taught me and that's what Mom has taught me. But I know people don't all believe this." And so we had an interesting conversation about that. I love telling my children, "I love the way you think." And I think that's what we need to do. We need to affirm our children in their questions, take them seriously, and answer them in a straightforward manner. That will often send us back to our own books and to other resources so that we have reasonable answers to their serious questions.
And of course, it's difficult because I can just imagine many parents, myself included, kind of saying, "But I don't know that much. And, I do read the Bible and I do pray and I do spend time in God's presence, but I don't feel like I'm qualified. I don't feel like I know enough to really help to shape my daughter's belief systems."
Yeah, well, that's a very difficult challenge. And the way I think about it is that there are three layers of confidence. On one level, you just know that there are people who can do this sort of thing. People who teach at universities, at seminaries, they write the books. And you experience confidence just knowing they're out there. You may not understand what they're saying. You may read a book by them and be a little confused. But at least you know that there are Christians at that level that are addressing those issues in the culture. So that provides confidence for some. For the next level up, there are those who can read and they can listen and they can engage in the dialogue and they understand. They can take notes and understand for themselves what contribution Christian intellectuals can make. But they may not be able to pass that along. They're not conversant enough to be able to engage, go toe-to-toe, eyeball-to-eyeball with a secularist at the same level. And then there are those who do. There are those who can rise to the occasion. They can take what they've learned and then re-articulate it in various circumstances. And so which of these suits you depends upon your own intellectual interests, your opportunities, the demands on your time. And I like to keep an eye out for the young person who just needs to be encouraged to take that next step and then from there to take the next step. And we'll build, in effect, a whole army of intellectuals for the next generation.
The reality is that our world now looks very different to the world that we grew up in, with the technology advancing as quickly as it is. They're talking about all kinds of developments and things, autonomous cars and, you know, systems that will be able to diagnose diseases and so forth and so on. And so a preparedness, not only for adults, but for children, is vitally important. Richard, just in terms of that, how do we set our kids up for the best possible future and the best possible life?
Yes, and one of the things that immediately comes to mind, my own experience when I got saved at 16, my church didn't prepare me for what I might encounter at university. So when I first started encountering challenges to my faith, it stumbled me in my faith precisely because I wasn't even forewarned, not even enough. It's not that I wasn't equipped to handle I wasn't even warned that there was a such thing as skeptics who, on the one hand, may even say they affirm the Christian faith, but yet were relatively skeptical about ingredients of the Christian faith. So I think there's a responsibility that the local church has to expose its members to these ideas, conflicting ideas and what's a Christian response at various levels, depending on, again, person's desire and opportunity or whatever. So I see the role of the local church is vitally important. And I encourage people to carve out time in their life to read. I think this is something that's lost and getting progressively lost. We're reducing everything to emojis now, and they can't really...
memes.
Yeah, and memes, and those things can't shoulder complex thought. And we're losing that ability, I think, as a culture if we're not careful. I mean, we're going back to hieroglyphics almost, it seems like.
Yeah.
So I try to encourage Christians at whatever measure of faith God has given them to read good Christian books that deal with some of these ideas and be prepared to stretch your mind. C.S. Lewis said, if something is over your head, just raise your head up a little bit higher.
Wow, that's good. So, Doug, in terms of some books that have helped and helped shape and helped you to develop, maybe you can just highlight a few of those, if you don't mind.
I have a colleague at my university named Sean McDowell who has written a number of very helpful books and other materials. He speaks on this topic for parents and for teenagers, young teenagers and older teenagers on these topics. So more material is being produced that is available at the level and in a way that is of interest to these students, engaging, but it's serious stuff. This is another sophisticated Christian apologist who has targeted the need to educate our younger people in this area. So that would be Sean McDowell, whose work I would recommend.
Okay. Is it Sean, S-E-A-N, S-H-A-W-N?
Yes, it's S-E-A-N.
S-E-A-N, okay, right. Sean McDowell, fantastic. And then in terms of just as we wrapping up this segment, before we go to Story of Hope after 8 o'clock, the foundational truths, this is something that I've been kind of going through my head. Some of those pillars some of those foundational blocks that need to be in place, that we as parents need to put in place for our kids in terms of our belief. What would those
be? Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is something that that Doug has already mentioned several times, and that is the idea that there is a such thing as truth. So we're battling an increasing movement in especially in the humanities and universities called postmodernism. And whatever else we want to say about what that is, one of its deleterious effects is it's almost reducing everything, every kind of idea, to a difference between, well, do you like asparagus or Brussels sprouts?
Oh, wow.
You know, do you like this kind of, in other words, just a matter of taste. Mm. And people are losing touch with the fact that, no, there are some things that are just true about the world. And the scientists usually are pretty good at this. They know that there's an objective truth about the solar system, let's say. But when we start getting into ideas that fit more into the humanities, including religious ideas, people want to reduce these to just a matter of personal taste. So I think as Christians, we have to reinforce the fact that we're saying Jesus is the Son of God and he died for our sins. That's either true or false. It can't be true for one person and false for another.
That's very powerful. Doug, any that you'd like to add in terms of those foundational things that we need to put in place for our kids?
Well, yes. I think that what's happened now is we moved away from conviction that there is such a thing as truth towards storytelling. We have story talk in the world today. And so the question is, what's your story? Let me tell you my story. But a story is something you buy into. It's not something you believe. And so people live in a world of make-believe. And the world is something you make. You kind of make it up as you go. And the elements of the story give coherence and cohesion to your life, but not at all with the confidence that your life is grounded in truth, objectively speaking.
Wow, that's powerful. So again, it's just a reminder of going back to basics, going back to the Word of God, right?
Well, certainly. We want to rely on any source of knowledge at our disposal. But for the Christian, the most fundamental authoritative source is going to be the Scriptures. However, on what basis will we believe that the Bible is to be trusted, is God's own revelation? Well, for that, you're going to need evidence.
Sure. Evidence that demands a verdict, eh? Gentlemen, it's been great chatting to you, and we are so excited because Doug Guyvett is going to be sticking around to share his personal story of hope in our Story of Hope segment just after 8 o'clock this morning. You don't want to miss that conversation. So stick around. Thank you so much, Dr. Richard. Thank you, Dr. Professor Doug, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
CCFM 107.5.